Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show. I'm Andrew Slavin, and I think we can say congratulations to Ross County on their promotion back to the Premiership. If the Staggies don't go up, we're probably going to feel pretty stupid, but not as much as they will. Who will they be playing next season? St Mirren are building up steam, Hamilton are hanging in, but Dundee just look doomed. Heckenbottom's a bit in love, and Celtic are a bit insipid. Plus, the pendulum swings in the race for Europe as Clark kicks off. Kelly end with 8 men against Aberdeen as we ask, what is it about Aberdeen players that other teams just don't like? There are 3 of us in the studio today, although who knows how many we'll end up with. Hello, Anthony Joseph. You look like a yellow card type of player.
Do I?
You look like a studs up kind of guy.
Is that because I've come in shorts and t-shirts?
Shorts
ready
and t-shirt.
For action.
You're ready for your ankles to be raked. And alongside him, a man who's definitely going off for dissent, it's JJ Bull.
Anthony's a clean player.
I've never been booked.
Is that right?
Juvenile or amateur football or anything.
JJ, have you ever been booked?
Of course not. Look at me. Although I was mugged on Thursday night and I came away with all my stuff, so I did well.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You were almost mugged.
No, I was mugged. I'd had enjoyed an evening of pubness.
Pubness.
I was drunk.
Pubness.
But I managed. I was mugged, and I managed to get my phone back and sort of stall them long enough to get into the light away from the park. By the way, everyone, don't walk through a park at night.
Drunk.
Just don't do it.
I was going to ask if you had a good Easter weekend.
No,
but
if anything, I had
not.
A bad Friday.
Yeah.
I didn't get mine. I didn't lose my stuff, though.
Well, that's good. Well done. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks.
What did you get up to, Anthony?
Just out drinking as well, getting pubness.
What is with you two?
That's very unprofessional.
Yeah. Going out and drinking.
How dare you, man.
Took in English football action for all my sins.
Yeah.
Oh, did you? What did you see?
West Ham against Leicester.
At the football.
In Stratford.
It's just not quite as nice
Brendan
as going
Rogers
to...
is getting on.
Yeah.
Oh, really? How is he?
He was celebrating a last-minute equaliser.
Wow.
He's doing really well at Leicester,
actually.
Turns out he's a good manager.
Do you want to know what I got up to at the weekend?
Yeah. No. But tell me.
I went up home, drinking. It was great fun.
So unprofessional.
Yeah. Went and saw the Mighty Queen of the South again with a massive win, 2-0 against Dunfermline.
That's very nice.
It's huge. Absolutely huge. It's mental at the bottom of the championship.
Did you get voice spotted again?
I did bump into Martin again.
That's good.
Did he get another selfie?
No, he didn't. He didn't.
You declined.
I didn't decline. I didn't ask for one. But yes, I bumped into Martin again, my Dumfries stalker. Honestly, I mean, he will be listening to this. I'm sorry, Martin, but I was in one pub and he was there. I mean, he was already there. But then I went into 3 more pubs in Dumfries and he was in all 3 of them.
But isn't that just like a night out in Dumfries, though? That's just what you do, right?
Yeah, to be fair, there's a kind of route that I normally go. And from where I started, most people would go that route.
Well, do you know someone else who probably had a good night out?
Aaron Cuthbert, by any chance?
Well, probably, but probably drinking water or Lucozade or another energy drink, because she's a professional.
Yes, she is. And I assume you're alluding to her being nominated for PFA Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year.
That's right, she plays for Chelsea.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's really good.
Very good
really,
player.
Really good. Well, we can be proud of the women, but unfortunately, we have to talk about the men. It's been coming, and last Thursday, it became official. Alex McLeish was sacked as Scotland manager after just 14 months of his second spell in charge. We're joined now by Stefan Bienkowski from the BBC and the 2.1. It's been a month since the defeat in Kazakhstan, so Stefan, what's been going on for the last month?
Oh, in typical Scottish football fashion, it's been absolute mayhem. One storm in a teacup after another, and only the way that really Scottish people imagine can do. But there has been kind of some justification behind it. Obviously, the defeat to Kazakhstan and the kind of tepid performance against San Marino really just dumped a whole amount of, you know, jet fuel on top of the flame that's kind of always been burning among a lot of Scotland fans. With regards to Alex McLeish, he got through the Nations League qualification campaign by the skin of his teeth, and that didn't really put anyone in either camp. either they were for or against McLeish. They didn't really suggest to anyone that, you know, things were about to change. The people who thought McLeish was a decent enough appointment maybe pointed to it and said, look, he's at least getting the job done. But the people who were against the appointment said, you know what, that's not really, it's not very convincing at all. I'm sure people outside of Scotland may be kind of rolling their eyes at the thought that the Scotland national team, who haven't been to a major competition since 1998, should be going to places like Kazakhstan and demanding wins. But their recent record suggests they weren't a particularly strong side. And despite what some may think of Scottish football, the kind of current crop of players that have come through recently do suggest that fans can begin to raise their expectations. And as we've seen, the Scottish FA finally decided to fall in line with the majority of the Tarn Army and saying that McLeish might not be the man to do that. If you look at the manner in which Scotland have qualifying games coming up, there's about 2 months now between now and the home game to Cyprus and the away match to Belgium. That gives a new manager the opportunity to get his feet under the desk and really make sure he picks up 3 points against Cyprus. I think the game obviously in Belgium, there's not much we can expect from that. But what's quite crucial is 2 months after that is the double header at home at Hampden to Belgium and Russia. I think that's where the Scottish FA, we're really looking for a new manager to build up some momentum. McLeish, to his credit, never really had much support in regards to the friendlies that he was stuck playing. He was forced to go on this bizarre South American tour where he was playing teams that were about to go to the World Cup. He came back home and then played Belgium again of all sides. So he never really got friendly matches to actually build a squad or build any momentum. And I think if there's anything the Scottish FA hopefully will learn from McLeish's tenure, it was that, you know, this team are very young, they're very inexperienced. It's a lot of new faces, and whoever's coming in next is really going to have a few friendly matches between those qualifiers I've mentioned so that they can really nail down a starting 11, some momentum.
Even his appointment brought some criticism because it felt almost like jobs for mates. You know, the SFA were vocal and pretty vocal enough, and the fact they were going for Michael O'Neill from Northern Ireland, they failed to get him. And then Alex McLeish rocks up and Alan McRae, the president, kind of just goes, oh, well, I'll let... You know, it felt a bit laddie in a way. So it wasn't a great start for him. So does this spell that he's had now overshadow what he did in the past in 2007?
I think the manner in which he left the first time might overshadow what he did the first time for a lot of Scotland fans, to be honest with you. You're quite right in saying that McLeish was no favourite among a lot of Scotland fans because of the manner in which he left, I think it was for Birmingham City. And unfortunately for him again, the manner in which he came into this job, he was second, maybe third choice. There was suggestions that Walter Smith was who they went to after Michael O'Neill, and he also turned the job down. And as you said, there's now this ethos, there's a suggestion out of Scottish FA that there's no real due diligence being made, or at least there wasn't back then. And when the board ran out of ideas, they just went and appointed a manager who they were friends with, and one who, with the greatest respect to McLeish, hadn't done a lot in the game for quite some time. And, you know, you can say what you want about what McLeish did on the pitch and what he did with the squad. You can maybe even argue that he was quite brave in the players that he brought into the squad, the younger players, but everything around him, from the manner in which the Scottish FA behaved from his appointment onwards, really didn't do him any favours. And I think that's, as you said, that's just going to compound this kind of concept that McLeish and the SFA have just been completely abject over the last, 12, 18 months.
We should move on and talk about a few names that we should expect in the hat. Guys, what do you expect to hear over the next coming weeks?
The tartan hat.
The tartan hat.
I think if we're going Scottish, then it's got to be Steve Clarke or Derek McInnes. Both have done so well in Scotland. They know the Scottish Premiership well. McInnes especially is maybe at the right time to leave Aberdeen. I feel he may even think that he's at the end of the cycle. Mm-hmm. I know Stevie Clarke said that he wants his next job to live in England after all the sectarian stuff that was going on. But he can still live in England and be Scotland manager. Gordon Strachan did that, and Alex McLeish did that. I think those are the two prime targets for Scottish managers. I heard Alex Neil's name mentioned as well, but he's just signed a new deal at Preston.
That's right, yeah.
It's hard to think of foreign managers who'd want the job. I know Bilic has put his name into the hat, and therefore if Bilic wants it as well, I think I would take him as well. Whoever comes in, they've got to get the squad right. They've got to find their best team by next March, because taking away this Euro qualifiers group just now, then it's the playoffs really that we're looking at, because
The Nations League playoff.
The Nations League playoff, yeah. Because by then we need to have our best team. We're two games away from qualifying for a major tournament, and it's really important that we do it. We've got to have that team ready by March.
JJ, do you agree with that? Would you be happy to see Dennett McInnes go from Aberdeen?
I think he gets paid so much at Aberdeen, him and Tony Docherty, that I don't know whether he'd want to leave such a sort of stable, reliable job.
Do you not think he would get similar type of money at the Scotland job?
I don't know. I think they pay less. Yeah, I don't know what they pay Alex McLeish. I think, obviously, managing your country would be quite a cool thing to do, but it's coming to an end, this cycle, and he's going to have to rebuild. Mm-hmm. But there is a stadium coming, and it seems like he does quite like what he's doing. I'm not sure whether he'd take it on, because it's kind of a losing job. There's not much you can get out of it now. Steve Clark's the obvious one as well. I liked what England have done with hiring Southgate, someone who's maybe not that famous, but someone who's quite involved in international football, knows it well, has worked through the youth system. That's important because you want to work with whatever the sort of, I can't remember what the Scottish DNA thing's called.
Project Brave.
Project Brave.
Yeah, Malcolm Mackay's project. He was the brainchild of that.
He's certainly but, brave when it comes to worded text messages.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, well,
if he gets anywhere near it, that's an absolute shambles, baby. I mean, I know he said sorry and whatever else, but you can't have Malcolm Mackay.
Well, he also said
he's already
that
doing a top job at the SFA, though.
I mean,
would it not be a bit? I know the Scotland job's, you know, it's a class job, of course it is. But if he left this Project Brave to try and take the Scotland job full time, it seems a little bit kind of like, well, that's more important, surely, because that's the next generation that's coming through. And if he was to redeem himself in football in any way, that would be pretty impressive if you saw 15 years down the line a great team.
That's the other thing you were talking about, money. Do Aberdeen pay more than Scotland? I'm not sure, but the thing about money is, if we qualify for a major tournament, for the Euros, it's like £10 million. Goes straight to the Scottish FA. Mm-hmm. If it's the World Cup, I think it's just over 12 million. Yeah. We've been missing out on that for 21 years. That's nearly £100 million
of
money.
Yeah, it's not coming
out
either.
but that's money. But this is why it's really important for us, because we're getting left behind. We need to qualify for a major tournament, and that's £10 million straight into Scottish football that we weren't getting before. Well, yeah, and we need to be getting this kind of money, otherwise we're going to be left further behind.
Yeah, the SFA are without a sponsor for the men's national team, but the women's team have got a sponsor. Because they're class and they're doing a great job. Just to pick up on what you said earlier, JJ, about, you know, you liked the English FA had kind of adopted this, kind of coming through. Someone who's part of the wheel. So would you kind of advocate that Scott Gemmell as being, you know, someone that we could bring through?
I don't know enough about Scott Gemmell, so I can't possibly say. But
he's the under-21 manager.
I know that bit.
So similar.
And I know
to
who
Gareth
he is.
And he also wears a waistcoat.
I've never seen his teams play, so it's impossible to say. I've not heard him speak. And what I do like is that, well, we have heard, our producer heard from a very reliable source, that Scott's first name is actually Scotland.
Yeah.
That's why it has one T.
Yep. Scotland Gemmell. And all he needs,
that's cool.
All he needs, if he was to get the top job, is to get Jason Scotland as his assistant. He's managing the under 18s at Hamilton, so he's on his way.
Aberdeen players surrounding Broadfoot, and it's a red card for the Kilmarnock defender. He was intercepted, here's Sinead. He's caught by Finlay, and he's already on a yellow. And it's a second yellow for Stuart Finlay. And Rory McKenzie, the referee, goes to his pocket, it's a red card.
What is it about Aberdeen at Rugby Park? Dennett McInnes' men won there for the 10th time in succession, overtaking Kilmarnock into third place and possible European qualification. Scott McKenna with the only goal of the game, sandwiched in between three red cards for Kilmarnock. In fact, Kilmarnock have now had four red cards against Aberdeen this season. That's one more than Alfredo Morelos. Steve Clark delivered an amazing but brutal assessment of Stephen McLean, the referee. JJ, do you want to take us through some of the things that he said?
Sure, I'll do that. It was the worst refereeing performance I've ever seen in my life. He used to be on the FIFA list, now he's not. He struggles to referee Kilmarnock games because his dad played here for so long. I don't think he should referee Kilmarnock games anymore. Now, sure enough, Stephen McLean's dad, Stuart, played over 500 times for Kilmarnock. Mm-hmm. That's really, really harsh. And also, they were all red cards.
Yeah.
It's not his fault. I've seen some dreadful refereeing performances. This was just a weird game. It was a really, really weird game.
It was one of those where, in isolation, they are all red cards.
Yeah.
But I think his comments are coming from the management of the game.
Yeah, I think there was a point where you weren't sure where these decisions were coming from, and there was a general view that McLean didn't have control of this game.
But
in terms of what Clark said, it was really harsh. It's hard because Clark doesn't really rant and rave or go like shout or anything like that in press conferences. Mm-hmm. He sounds very calculated and everything, and it was a lot to take in what he actually said, and it got very weirdly personal as well. And to bring his dad, fair enough if you're criticising him and saying that he's not on the FIFA list or anything, that's all fact. And you can criticise a performance, but he was suggesting there was a lack of integrity there because of who his dad was. And I think that was really out of order from
Clark. He also said, and I'm in quotation marks, "In private, I have said it would be better if McLean didn't referee Kilmarnock games, but now I'm publicly saying it." It's almost like, well, who is he privately saying that to?
Do you know what I would do if I was at the SFA, the first referee I'd put in charge of the next Kelly game?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be bad if the SFA don't make him have another Kelly game, because that's a dangerous precedent to set if managers are speaking out about a referee saying, "I don't want him to manage another game of ours," and then him not getting another Kelly game.
Why don't we go into a couple of the incidents then? And I'll start with the Sam Cosgrove one, when he escaped a second yellow for a challenge on Greg Taylor. His first yellow, I don't think, is a yellow, if I'm honest. But when he jumps,
he kind of has his elbows high.
Yeah, but his eye is on the ball.
It's for a few of them. He does it all the time. Yeah. And this game in context, the ball was in the air longer than it was near the ground. And I'm not even trying to be funny. Like, it was about, I think it would be on the pitch for a total of about 10 minutes of the entire 90. It was just punt, 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 head, 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 head. Absolutely dreadful game. Cosgrove's leaping for the ball. There's a bit of a battle between everyone on here, mm-hmm. and he could easily have been sent off before halftime. No surprise that he got taken off by McInnes, because if he'd stayed on, the next foul he committed, he would have been off. Yeah. I think McLean was trying to manage that, because he could see that it was just, he was going to get sent off, basically.
Because he was involved for the yellow on Stuart Findlay, I think.
Yeah, they were both grappling each other. It was like,
yeah, exactly. So that was a bit, I mean, that was handbags again. I'm kind of trying to direct the chat to the point of, is McLean managing the game, or is he getting sucked into just the physicality of it all?
There were loads of little horrible kicks going on, but both teams were treating it like it was kind of Sunday league. It was absolutely no quality. It was just a rubbish game. The fouls that were going in were dreadful. The thing with Kurt Broadfoot's one, and I can see why Clark's annoyed with it, because he says he's not going in to harm him, but we've seen Broadfoot do ropey things before. I'm not saying he did here.
Yeah, like the one against Morelos at half-time, going off and scraping his studs
in. I don't think he meant it at all. He was always stretching. One, he just had no control over himself. It was just reckless. But I think it was still a red card. It was just reckless. There was no malice there, I don't think.
Yeah, would you not think, if it was yellow, you'd be like, I see why that's yellow too, right?
Yeah.
I can see why it's either.
I think it was because where his studs landed, it kind of clipped his face. I think anywhere else, then a yellow card. But I can see why it was. I think it was a red card.
The second yellow card for Stuart Findlay was 6 minutes to go. There was no complaints from Clark there, was there?
Yeah.
And then Rory McKenzie was booting Don Ball while he's lying on the ground.
Yeah.
That's the wrong word I would use. I don't think he's booting him.
He's digging his foot into him. He does it twice.
He does it twice.
Yeah, he does it twice. Yeah.
You don't properly see it in the replay, the second one.
Because from what I saw, and I'm basing this on the rule states, like, is there brutality and aggression to hurt the player? Is it not just a little bit of frustration? And even Don Ball, like, knees.
Is there not like a rule about dickishness yet? They should have that in. Because he's just been like a little weasel. Because I think Ball's back is to the referee. Mm-hmm. And this is the other thing. And I think what Clark's annoyed about with that red card, maybe not that it's a red card, but that the referee couldn't have seen it.
Yes, yeah.
Because McKenzie's been really smart while he kicks someone in the body. But that's what's really wound him up so much. So I can see where that comes from. But neither team deserved to win that game. I would relegate them both.
Third definitely qualifies for the Europa League. Fourth will qualify if Celtic win the Scottish Cup.
It's good news for Hibs.
Yeah.
Who will finish fourth?
Saints keeping it going. It's Mullen! You just sense that this is massive for St Mirren.
It was a massive win for St Mirren against 10-man Livingston at Almondvale on Saturday by 3-1. We're joined now by Graham McPherson from the St Mirren Supporters Trust. Graham, you were in the relegation playoff, but now you're 6 points clear of Dundee. Are you looking up rather than down?
Well, you can never be too sure where St Mirren are concerned. There's never a dull moment, but I think after what's been a fairly wretched season so far, I think there is maybe a bit of optimism. And as you say, they can maybe start thinking about trying to catch Hamilton rather than maybe worrying about Dundee behind them. Dundee's still only six behind them, so they could still be caught. But I think all the focus will be in trying to get that 10th spot, because I don't think the really fans are taking their chances and their players if they can at all avoid it. So they've managed to get it back in their own hands, which is the main thing. So if they kind of win the remaining games, they'll be safe. But that's obviously easier said than done.
Do you think there's much to be said about momentum if you were to finish in the relegation playoff spot? Whoever you face from the Championship, momentum could play a key part in staying up.
Yeah, I mean, Simon have got 24 points so far this season. The first 12, it took them 25 games to get that. The second 12 have only taken 9 games. So you can see they're starting to build something. Oran Kearney made a lot of changes in January. He brought in a lot of new players, a lot of them from overseas as well. And it was always going to take time for these guys to bed in, but I think finally it's starting to see them gel. A lot of the injured players have come back, and it's taken them, well, obviously towards the last 5 games of the season, but finally they're starting to show a bit of consistency. You can see in their performances week after week that a kind of team unit is growing there. So if they do go into the playoffs, then you would hope that would go in their favour.
When the season started, it feels like ages ago now, what were your expectations after, lost Jack Ross in the summer and he's done really well at Sunderland? What do you think was going to happen?
I think the feeling was that Alan Stubbs was an experienced pair of hands. Obviously, he'd done well at Hibs winning the Scottish Cup. It hadn't gone so well at Rotherham, but they went into the League Cup campaign and it went fairly disastrously. He let a lot of the guys who won the Championship, either froze them out or he let them go. He brought in a lot of players who hadn't played professional or first-team football. So I think alarm bells first to ring at that point. They won the first game of the season against Dundee. But the kind of stories of unrest behind the scenes kept growing. Didn't seem to be any kind of team unit there. And although he left after only 4 league games, I don't think there was too many St Mirren fans sad to see Alan Stubbs go, because it just obviously wasn't working out. And they took a punt on Oran Kearney. He'd been on their shortlist again in the summer. They went for him second time around, and hopefully now we're seeing that they've made the right choice. The good thing about the split is you're up against your nearest rivals every week. You're not going to Celtic Park or Ibrox and trying to get a win there. So it's in their own hands. I think maybe the SPFL have been kind to them. They've left the Hamilton and Dundee games to the last two. So St Mirren's first 3 matches against the 3 teams, I guess, with nothing really to play for. So if you can get to the point where you're pushing Hamilton, or you're almost, or maybe overtake them before you play them in the 4th match, then you know you may have that bit of momentum that we spoke about, and you go into these games in a lot of confidence.
Who do you think is the better team out of St Mirren and Hamilton? Like, not deserves it, it's the wrong word, but who do you think is more likely to do better next season, say, if they were to manage to stay up rather than being in that automatic spot?
Jesus, tough one, isn't it? I mean, obviously, they took a bit of a punt on Brian Rice because he'd never managed before, and he'd obviously been the assistant manager at St Mirren, which was an interesting mid-season transfer. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cliched, but Hamilton seem to have that way where they can dig out results when they need them. You know, they went up and won at Pittodrie, for example, and nobody expected that. So, yeah, I guess it depends what happens in the summer. I think St Mirren, regardless of whether they stay up or not, will have to change the whole squad. So a lot of the players are on short-term deals. Hamilton will probably be similar. They'll lose a few players as well. So you're probably looking at 2 new squads to start the season again. But I don't think there's a huge amount between them at the moment. I think if it does come down to that game on the second last game of the season, then yeah, it'll be very tight. Monday night football, but yeah, it should be interesting but tight.
So this game started kind of in St Mirren's favour. Craig Halkett sent off after 17 minutes, deemed to be last man for a foul on our good mate Brad Lyons. Correct decision from Willie Collum, our best mate.
Halkett doesn't get the ball at all.
He does get the ball.
No, he doesn't.
He clips it.
And do you know what?
He takes his left foot and swatches it from a front
angle. If you're going from the sports scene highlights...
Nope.
Right, it's wrong. The high behind,
clearly
shows there's no touching the ball at all.
He just takes his left leg. He doesn't even get his right leg at all.
He does. All right, I'm watching it right now again.
Watching it live, folks. See, I swapped it from guys to folks. That's a bit more normal.
It's close. I can see why it's a red.
But so you rescind it then?
No, I still think, from what I've seen, it looks like he touched the ball. And from what the referee has seen, maybe he thinks touched the ball too. So,
referee. If the referee thinks he touched the ball, he wouldn't send him off.
Well, it was, as you know, it's Easter weekend. Saturday is opposite day. So,
yeah, okay.
I'm surprised you didn't know that.
It looked like it would have played into St Mirren's hands, and it eventually did. But Livingston took the lead after that. And then Paul McGinn, brother of John, got the equaliser.
The modern fullback. up attacking the right wing, running into the box after a 1-2. That's how the pros do it.
Yeah, from a nice tight angle as well. It was good.
Yeah. What a finish.
Yeah, but also Danny Mullins' finish was really good as well.
Yeah, that
was
brilliant.
The way he took it down on his right and then moved his body around and just half-volleyed it into the bottom corner.
It's a pinger.
Brilliant. Yeah.
It's the kind of thing I would definitely put over the bar.
And they really needed that because it looked like they had quite a few chances before that, and you were just thinking they're not gonna get this winner.
Mm.
And then Mullen pulls that one out of the bag, and then they score 3 minutes later as well to finish it off.
Livingston have been excellent at home this season. It's one of the reasons why.
Now, aren't they? Like,
yeah,
the season's done.
I mean, what do you expect of? It's maybe a little bit silly to be asking this, but are you expecting more of the same from Livingston next season? Is it going to be a summer where they're going to lose the likes? Well, they're already going to lose Craig Halkett. They're probably going to lose a few more of their better players.
They'll be the Hamilton of next season, probably.
Well, okay.
It'll be a tough bottom six next season, but it'll be mostly a tough bottom four or three.
Just like this season.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Rangers denied Celtic the opportunity to win the title at the weekend with a comprehensive 3-1 victory over Hearts at Tynecastle. In fact, it's 4 wins out of 4 against Hearts this season for Steven Gerrard's side. A pretty dominant performance as well.
Yeah, Rangers were very good in this game. I think this is one of their best performances under Gerrard. And they were really exciting to watch. It was like a lot of free-flowing football. They were completely dominating the game from start to finish. And Hearts couldn't really handle them. It was like Arfield, Candeias and Defoe. They just didn't know what to do with them. Hearts, as well, were also poor. But when they were in possession, there was times when they were passing it about, they almost felt like, oh, we've had the ball too long. Instead of playing the simple pass, they just went long diagonal, then they lose possession again. And Rangers were brilliant, but Hearts really should have...
I think that's Hearts' style of progressive play, though, is to boot it and then move up the pitch.
Yeah, but I would disagree with that from the first half of the season, because I remember watching Hearts and thinking, this isn't a Craig Levein side I'm watching. This was some really interesting football I'm seeing. It was, most of it was on the deck.
It changes the game.
I see now a Craig Levein side of old, where it's really not. And it is quite one-dimensional, route one football, just looking to lump it up to Uche Ekpeazu, which is fine. And I know they've got injuries. I know they're missing a lot of key players. But Rangers just made them look like a bottom six side.
It's a problem when you've got, like, so Rangers have a much stronger midfield, so they're always going to win that battle. So one of the things Hearts were doing were trying to just bypass that. But you don't want to just, you have to keep the ball. You can't always be lumping it. You have to keep it for a bit. Like Tony's saying, you've got to keep it for a wee bit. And it is almost like they get bored. I've seen loads of Scottish teams
do
that.
It's like they don't know what to do. There were so many times where there was a simple pass, often to Zoom in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah.
But they'd lump up. It's like, we've had the ball too long. No, just keep it. Just keep
passing
it about.
Players are scared, aren't they? Because they drop into that like sixth place and they get the ball. They don't know what they're meant to do with it. They turn. Because if you lose it there, you're in real trouble.
Especially when Rangers, in the first 15 minutes, tackle you in the middle of the park and then go flying up and score. I mean, no one wanted to be that man again. Everyone's too scared of the ball.
Hearts were dealt a blow, I think, in the warm-up because Sean Clare took ill in the warm-up, so they were a man down. I think it was Craig Whiting who came on, and he was at fault for the first goal. So Jermaine Defoe's came in and scored this goal. That's 7 goals and 7 assists in 16 games for Rangers. He's playing his part for Rangers when it took quite a slow time for him to do that.
I think I want more from him.
Yeah.
7 goals and 16 games. I don't know.
You have to look at where
goals
came from.
It's assists as well in 16 games, so that's almost a goal and assist per game. He's doing well, but I just don't think he's a player that Rangers can rely on. I can see why he's in there. He will score goals, he'll set up goals, he'll play his part. But if he's someone every week, playing up front every week, I don't think you can rely on him producing every week.
I think he'll be all right next season. Now he's had like a taste and has sussed it out, I think he'll probably be a lot better.
He could very well
be. It takes a while to suss out Scottish football. It's very, like, Scottish Premiership is a lot different to other leagues.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a lot faster. So you don't get as much time on the ball to think because someone absolutely clatters into you and you have to be aware. And that's maybe I know he's played at Premier League level international, so he should be quite good at dealing with these sorts of things. I don't know. Hearts are a lot better in the second half, but they couldn't be much worse than they were in the first.
Do you think Hearts have got one eye in the cup? Because you had Craig Levein come out post-match and just not really react to any of the questions about the game in particular. It was just very much like, well, do you know what? I have to believe that the next game is going to be better. He didn't want to slate any of his players. He just kind of wanted to keep it.
They should also all be itching to be in that cup final starting 11. Their performances should be... I can see why they drop off if there's not so much to play for in the league, but hopefully then they'll start ramping it up in the next couple of weeks.
Mm.
I mean, and say in context, like, Rangers are a lot better than Hearts just now. So, yeah.
Well, they've played 4-1-4 against Hearts. That's very good.
Yeah, 3-1's not a terrible score. Mm. Just that first half performance wasn't great. Again, I think Hearts will be better next season, but a lot of Hearts fans are really, really running out of patience with Craig Levein. And it sounds like a lot of them want change.
The Championship, League One, League Two, what's going on? Here's Neil White with the answers.
Ross County are champions after just one season away. Brian Graham's perfect hat-trick, or at the very least one that was distributed fairly evenly around the edges of his towering frame, gave them a 3-1 win at Ayr on Friday. Dundee United are 6 points and 18 goals back with 2 to play. United will wait out the first round of playoffs. They are safe in second now after a 2-0 win at Inverness. The only unknown is whether Inverness or Ayr will have home advantage in the second leg. Robbie Nielsen, the United manager, seems to have settled on the strike pairing of Pavel Safranco and Paul McMullen in the run-in. They were both on target again. At the bottom, it was a seismic 90 minutes of football. Partick Thistle started in 10th, but they came from behind to beat Alloa 2-1. Scott McDonald won it for Thistle, and what else is there to say about him as a signing? In pure value terms, getting him on a Bosman from BBC Scotland in February has been the coup of the season. Morton won 2-0 at Falkirk, Greg Kilty and Charlie Telfer with 2 huge goals. No response from Falkirk in front of yet another big, angry crowd at the Bernabeu. Queen of the South came up with a 2-1 win at home to Dunfermline under massive pressure. Big goals from Josh Todd and Ian Wilson, who's on loan from Kilmarnock. So, starting at the bottom, Falkirk started the weekend out of the drop zone and are now at the bottom on 35. They face the top two teams in the division in their remaining fixtures. Next, it's Partick on 37, and with a game in hand over everybody else at the bottom, their trip to Ayr on Tuesday is massive. Then on 38 points, Alloa and Queen of the South, Morton are on 40, and Dunfermline on 41 points could still get dragged into it. League One, champions Arbroath drew 2-2 with Raith on Sunday, so it's still Arbroath, Forfa, Raith and Montrose need a point now to clinch the last playoff position after they won 2-1 at Airdrie. They were helped by Dumbarton's 3-0 win over East Fife, who have collapsed in the final quarter of the season. And with that, Dumbarton are safe, as are Stranraer, who beat Brechin 3-0. So, Brechin and Stenismuir are both on 35 points at the bottom, but Steny will need the better results in the final two games, as Brechin have an 8-goal advantage. League 2 beat Stirling at home on Saturday, and Peterhead will win the division. They were 2-1 winners in Elgin, thanks in large part to a penalty save by Greg Fleming, who got down low to stop Ross McIver from making things a bit sticky. Only Clyde can stop the Blue Toon. They battered Berwick 5-0, and Berwick have to win both of their last two games to avoid the relegation playoff of doom. And that's because Albion Rovers, for so long this season the losingest team in the land, beat long-time League 2 leaders Edinburgh City 3-2. Two brilliant volleys from Smart Osadolor, who also nabbed them a point at Peterhead in injury time last week. Smart, a sub-editor's dream, was signed on loan from Queen's Park just before the door closed in February, back when Albion Rovers were dead and buried. He's like a Nigerian Scott McDonald.
We should mention Cove Rangers, champions of the Highland League. They had some very sad news over the weekend that their manager, John Sherrin, had suffered a heart attack on Sunday. Sherrin is thankfully recovering after an operation, and we at the Totally Scottish Football Show sent him all of our best wishes. They've got a huge game on Saturday, guys, as well, against Lowland League champions East Kilbride in the playoffs. So everyone should keep a close eye on that game. Should be a good one.
Imagine losing that after the whole season of getting to the top. It's so unfair.
Well, Cove got through to the playoff.
I know,
final
and then
last
you still
time,
got to play another game after that.
Yeah, well, they played Cowdenbeath last season.
There was
season,
an oil
rumble. Yeah. Yeah, they got three players sent off in injury time.
We should also mention it's not quite as important as the fact that John Sheeran has survived a heart attack. But Fort William scored a goal on the weekend.
Another goal, which brings them to what, minus 43 goal difference?
Oh, no, it's way worse
like
than
100
that.
And
oh, really?
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'll just tell you. It's minus 240 goals they've conceded.
Jesus.
Which is pretty good going.
Now, barring a mathematical miracle, Ross County are back in the Premiership at the first time of asking after victory at Ayr last Friday night. We welcome back Ross County supporter, liaison officer, Kenny McLennan to the podcast. Stuart Kettlewell and Stephen Ferguson, joint manager of Ross County, just sum up the job they've done, Kenny.
Absolutely amazing. The guys have ticked all the boxes basically when they got the job, and as far as I'm concerned, they've delivered everything that was asked of them. You know, considering they've had horrendous injuries to, you know, if you look at Liam Fontaine, Ian Vigers and Billy Mackay, that's the spine of our team, effectively. The only player that probably in that spine that we haven't lost is Scott Fox, but that's three key players. That's just three of about probably six players that are missing. So, that, you know, taking that into consideration as well, it's fantastic. And to be fair, they've been the most consistent team probably over the season. You know, some of the supporters would say the football hasn't been that great at times, but then, you know, sometimes you've just got to grind it out.
What do you think will happen next? Do you think they'll need to bring different players in of a higher standard? Do you think they can keep the same style of football going next season?
I think they'll obviously have to be a recruitment drive, obviously. I think, yeah. I mean, some of the guys, I think, only signed 1-year deals as well, some of them. So I don't know. There's quite a few of them, I think, out of contract, but I would think the majority of them will want to stay, because there's a really good feeling about the squad. You know, you can see that when they score goals and stuff, they're all congratulating each other. They're all running over to the bench. So it's there's definitely you know, the last time we had a squad like this, it was the team that came up to the Premiership the first time round, and it was sort of went about 40 games unbeaten. So, you know, it's a lot to do with the squad mentality, and I think definitely probably more options at the back. And personally, I'd like to see a sort of real sort of like ball winning sort of midfield sort of general type player, somebody that you know we've not really had since Stuart himself played. You know, somebody that can actually like win the ball and actually like start an attack. You know, we could do with somebody like that. The other thing as well is that you know, maybe a bit of wide width as well, you know, so a couple of wingers maybe. And definitely we'd probably have to look at the striking options up front as well, you know, because I don't know what's going to happen there with regards to guys staying, whether other people come in and grab them. This is the thing as well, you know, our players will probably be in sort of targets for other clubs as well. So
what's the financial situation at Ross County? Because I think the owner's got a bit of money, isn't he? He's a local guy.
He is, yeah. Roy's fantastic. You know, he's a Ross County fan, to be honest. You know, and he runs a very, very successful business. He's involved with the oil industry, so you know, Roy's ploughed a lot of his own money into the club and stuff. There'll be money from going up to the top leagues, you know, but obviously we'll have to spend quite a bit as well to strengthen the squad as well. So I'm sure, you know, we're dying to get sort of Friday out of the way and hopefully get either the draw that we need or the win. I prefer the win, to be honest, but if we can get over the line, then at least then the whole club and everybody around it can start planning and work out what's happening for next season, you know.
Last time we spoke to you before becoming the liaison officer, the supporter liaison officer, you were the drummer at Dingwall. Have you been banging your drum in the last few weeks? We'll be banging it on Friday against Queen of the South.
Unfortunately, I had a bit of an issue with the game against Dundee United. When Jamie Lindsay scored, we got a wee bit excited in the jail end, and I ended up putting my drumstick through the drum.
That's great.
Oh, no!
Yeah, so it's burst.
Well, it means you've got to buy a whole drum kit now to set up.
Aye, well, I'll be working with Roy. Aye.
Queen of the South have got their own drum. They've got a guy who plays a drum. Maybe you could ask him.
Oh, maybe ask him for a shot. Maybe the two of us will have a shot at the same drum or something. Aye.
Neil Lennon returned to Easter Road on Sunday.
Easter Sunday.
Yep. But the champions drew 0-0. Before we talk about Celtic, though, let's show some love to Hibs. Unbeaten in 9 league games under Paul Heckingbottom. He's yet to taste defeat in the Premiership, lads.
He's the boy. He kens Fitzgannon.
He does. He's been mightily impressive since he came in. I think Hibs seem a much more professional outfit under Heckingbottom. Just watching them play is...
They play nice football. It's positional football, so they all move to certain places to make sure there are passes open to keep the ball moving between through the lines so they can actually keep it and play at the park. I don't know why every manager in the world doesn't do this. I don't understand it.
They have really good stages of play. I seem to kind of remember thinking that they do certain things in certain stages. So when they're defending, they're really obviously really tight at the back, but there's so much movement up front when they're in possession of the ball. So Omeonga, as much as he can break up play in that defensive midfielder role, he can also operate at the top of a diamond, and he finds some really nice passes. And Daryl Horgan has been excellent since Heckingbottom came in. Get a more easier name to say, Paul.
He nearly Hibs should have been probably 2-0 up in the first few minutes. Horgan had an excellent chance, and then he set up another, which I think it was Omeyanga just couldn't get on the end of.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
That was, yeah, could have been 2-0. But overall in the game, I think Lennon was saying that Celtic had enough chances to win the game. He probably is right. Marciano had a brilliant game, but they weren't great at all.
They weren't clear chances.
Did Hibs. Ollie Shaw in the final minutes. Yeah. And it was, I don't think Scott Bain knew much about it, to be honest.
Not at all. It just hit his leg. Yeah, it could have gone through his legs.
You saw Scott Brown's disgraceful, should be in jail dive. Yeah, it's not on.
Yeah, he leaves his leg out, doesn't he? He knows what he's doing, but he doesn't. He doesn't protest, but he's trying to give the referee a decision.
He knows.
Johnny Hayes does that in the first half as well.
Does he?
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these last-minute winners for Celtic recently—is it masking a kind of pedestrian performance from Celtic?
Well, they've just been trundling away to the title, and that's them had 5 0-0s in the league this season, and two of them were under Rodgers as well. So, apart from the post-winter break spell where they were scoring a few and keeping clean sheets, they were never really firing on all cylinders in the league, even when Rodgers was there. And Lennon's just taken it on, and they've almost just been the same. I know they play in a different style, but in terms of results, they're still drawing here and there, and that's what they were like at the start of the season as well.
Are they missing certain key players, though, to play when they came back from Dubai in January, and they're still unbeaten in the league.
That's
right?
What they did. They had Burke and Ware come in and injected a bit of life into them. But Lennon's a bit more reluctant to play them.
I mean, they're going to win the league. Well, they've won the league, basically. They're going to win the treble, probably. It's kind of hard to motivate players for games when you're just walking along towards the end of the league. I'm not sure how Lennon can do much more with that. What I can see on the pitch is that while Heckenbottom's got his players moving all around fluid and it's nice positions going on everywhere, Celtic are really strictly like boxed. So there's always players level with each other, and you should have players farther ahead, so you've got like a forward, like diagonal, vertical pass. I guess that's actually the terming for it, but it sounds nerdy as hell.
Well, there's an obvious style of play under Lennon where they just like to play it out to the wing and get crosses into the box.
Yeah, but they don't have any striker.
Well, and also they just double up on the winger.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very easy to defend against.
It's watching that Hibs Celtic game, you'd think, I can't believe Aberdeen got done 3-0 to them, because if you play football, nice football, it turns out the way that we kind of set up for that semi-final is not the right way to hold Celtic, although you could say that maybe they were far more motivated for that game against Aberdeen than they were for this game against Hibs. It's kind of difficult to work it out, but I think the way Heckenbottom's got in Hibs playing, they could even finish third, because the momentum will take them through the rest of the season, probably fourth.
You said fourth earlier on.
I know. Well, Aberdeen got the advantage, so you'd think they'd maybe be there, but yeah.
Well, I wonder if this will play into the minds of the Celtic hierarchy with whether or not they're actually going to give Neil Lennon the job or not. But moving on, bottom club Dundee sunk to their 8th defeat in a row as St Johnstone ran out 2-0 winners at McDermott Park. Former player and ex-Scotland captain Colin Hendry must have been annoyed in this game, because his son Callum grabbed the second goal in this game, and he's already scored against Dundee this month. Raging. Must be raging.
What a guy Colin Hendry was.
Yeah.
Nice hair.
Yeah.
The free kick in this game, the top corner goal.
Oh, yeah.
That's a free kick.
Yeah.
That's how we should all take free kicks from now on.
Although the goalkeeper does get a hand on it.
Gets a hand on it, but I don't think you can blame him.
Tanzer can hit a free kick. Dundee are, I mean, I don't want to use the alliteration, they are doomed.
Out of 34 all season long.
They're a really bad team in this league. They've got, 18 points? And they've only won 7 points at home as well, and conceded 70 goals. We were talking about Fort William earlier. Dundee in the Premiership have conceded 70 goals. That just, you deserve to go down.
I mean, you can't blame Jim McIntyre for, completely overhauling the squad in January. I think he brought a new squad in January, didn't he?
But do you know what? They're sixth in the wage bill in the Premiership. So to be relegated is absolutely astonishingly bad.
I mean, that's just poor acquisitions, isn't it?
Terrible spending of money.
It's part a miracle as well, isn't it, that they're going to stay up. So it's
Jim McIntyre said he has to win every game. They have to win every game.
That's four games. They've only won four, so I can't see it. They're down.
Bye-bye, Dundee.
Bye, Dundee.
Kind of sucks for them.
Hamilton moved 8 points clear of the D thanks to a late Marius Ogbo equaliser against Motherwell at New Douglas Park.
NDP. People call it that, right?
NDP?
Yeah.
I've never heard it like that.
I've never heard it like that.
No, I'm going to start that.
You should.
I just know it now as the Hope CBD Stadium, isn't it, really?
The Hope CBD NPD.
Because that's the cannabis
oil. Yeah, you know me.
That's the cannabis oil, isn't it?
Oh, would it? And how would you know about that?
Because it was in an article and I read it. But it's not got the drug effects to it, I've been told. But anyway, how big could that goal be for Hamilton?
9.
Yeah? Solid 9? 11, maybe?
9.
On a scale of to go. Hamilton, as we've been saying, they're really not very good either. And between, like I was saying a bit earlier, between them and St Mirren, I don't know who is really worse. I'd say maybe Hamilton
Maybe say Hamilton as well.
Yeah. Motherwell are absolutely fine. David Turnbull won all the awards that they have.
Yeah, he did
this week.
Yeah, he won Player of the Season, Youth Player of the Season, Players Player of the Season. Yeah. What was the fourth one? Goal of the Season.
Best
it was
David Turnbull impression. And also,
give him a statue. Get the boy a statue.
They might.
Guys, what do you think about Jake Hastie? Looks like he's off to Rangers.
Like I said before, I'm not sure about this deal. I don't think he's good enough.
And do you think he's got the ability to be good enough, but it's too early for him to go?
I just don't know if he's ever going to be
if Rangers, how much game time he's going to get, isn't it?
Well, I think if Rangers want to be a Champions League team, which they do, right, they need players who can play at that level or near it. I don't see anything in Jake Hastie that I would love it if I was totally wrong, but I've not seen anything in him that he's anything other than a slightly unpolished, quite talented young player. But there are quite a lot of them, and Rangers will sign him, he'll do okay, and then they'll spend more money on someone who is instantly better. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, there you go, he's stuck on the bench and he's not managed to fill his potential. If you play when you're 18, 19, you get really, really good quite fast. Not a lot of players don't really go above that level. They get more experience, they're better in certain situations, but if you're a forward, generally you're quite good when you're young because you're creative and you come up with things and you've got pace.
Fearless as well.
Fearless, yeah, there you go. But as soon as you hit 26, I mean, I'd love to be wrong, and I hope it works out for both clubs.
Well, Motherwell are doing their business early as well. They've got Declan Gallagher from Livingston and now Liam Polworth from Inverness. Yeah,
Polworth will be a good signing. He's had, especially in the Scottish Cup games, he's been brilliant for them.
Mm. Quite interesting. Do you know why Brian Rice would have loved the Marius Ogbo goal despite him getting a point?
No.
Because he didn't even know he was a football player when he got to the club. Thought he was a waiter.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
And why would a manager assume there's a waiter in the training ground?
Well, because he's... I don't know. I think when I read it, he said, I just thought he was a big waiter. Because he's massive.
Is he walking around a tuxedo or something?
I don't know.
So Rice is out in the training pitch. Yeah. He's coming around with hors d'oeuvres.
That's it from us. We'll be back next Monday after Aberdeen v Rangers and Celtic v Kilmarnock. Can Kelly cancel the coronation? We'll speak to you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and be sure to check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.